Blog Talk Radio. And you can also Facebook message any comments or questions that you have to at No Longer Broken 2, and also through the Initiative Radio Network if you're used to doing it that way. Hopefully I'll be able to get to those this evening. But as always, please feel free to join in and let us know what your comments or questions are, or just call in. As always, I love to hear from you, and everyone's opinion is valued. There's no one way to think, I don't believe. Everyone's entitled to your opinion, and as we grow and as we go through life, we get different opinions, we get different levels of knowledge, and the way that we think changes. But if you caught my show last week, you know that I've been talking about this month is kind of dedicated to the ladies, to the women, my queens, our queens, and talking about economic development and the importance that it has in the community for us as women to get our money together. I will say this throughout the evening tonight, but I do want to say right now that tomorrow I am hosting a free teleconference, and it's Financial Freedom, and You Can Prosper It From Your Passion. In January, I will be launching my first coaching group for my new business coaching business, IWBS, which stands for Inspired Women Business Solutions. And if you'd like further information on that, you can go to iwbusinesssolutions.com. And I'm looking for at least 10 women who are ready to take their financial literacy, their finances, to the next level in 2018. My mantra is 2018 is about securing that bag, whether it's Chanel, whether it's Coach, whether it's Louis V, Prada, whatever you have, secure that bag, holding on to that money and getting economic empowerment and financial freedom that we can finance our freedom. We're always talking about how we need to get free of the people. We talk about protesting. We talk about marching. We talk about going natural. We talk about standing up in the faces of our enemy. But what are we going to do economic empowerment of? They always say in the business world that it takes money to make money. Well, I say it takes money for us to be free, because our oppressors have gotten used to us marching. They have gotten used to us protesting. If you look at the recent protests that have happened in the NFL, the only thing that really got their attention, really when Colin Kaepernick did what he did, you know, kudos to the brother, not taking anything away from him, but he was a one-man band at the time. When the owners of the team actually started showing up, paying attention to what was going on, was when money started being taken away, when people started protesting the game. So what did they do? They got out there on the field and they joined their players, but it really wasn't because that they were protesting police brutality, or they were saying what was started and kneeling during the anthem was actually right. They just were trying to find ways to appease those who were protesting. So I believe in their minds, and the way that it came off was like, hey, I get down here and I kneel this one Sunday. Everybody will think that we're together. We'll go back to football as normal people, and we'll make sure that our money stays where it needs to be put. So really in this world, the only thing that matters is money. Because if you look at the government and you look at the powers that be, they will sell out their souls. They will sell out their own families for the dollar at the end of the day. And this country is ran by a small group of people, the elitists. It's like about the 5%, if I'm not mistaken. It's like five families, really, that have the majority of the wealth in the United States of America, and at the end of the day, they're really the ones that run the legislature. They buy the lobbyists. I was watching a clip earlier today, and I was seeing this, I think it was a congressman that was arguing about the new tax bills that are coming out right now, and how a lot of the tax write-offs or deductions, anybody out there, when they saw taxes, itemized deductions, you know, that when you itemize, you get more of a tax break if you own your own home and you pay mortgage, and you get the mortgage interest that you pay as a deduction. If you have medical expenses, it's a deduction. If you have certain tax, state taxes, it's a deduction. So you end up getting more than the standard deductions for having certain things. Well, they're trying to wipe all of that out and take those deductions and give those to the wealthiest people in America, giving the wealthier people more of a tax break, which in turn increases the gap between the wealthy and the middle class. And really, there really isn't a lower class. The middle class is lower class. Well, there's almost grown to the point in the United States of America where there's only two classes. And as that show goes, the haves and have-nots is what it's turning into. But I believe that we as a people have to get better educated on economics and how money works and how we can use it in our favor. And the reason that I'm focusing on women is because, for one, I'm a woman. And passion. My passion is helping women and working to see women free in their minds, bodies, and their spirits. Three-dimensional. That's just what I was put here to do, and that's who I am. And also, I was reading this morning and looking at some statistics, and statistics showed that over 63% of black children grow up in single-parent homes, and a majority of those homes are ran by females, black females. And when you look at the fact that a lot of us as black women, we just go to work trying to make it, trying to feed our children, trying to keep a roof over our heads and clothes on our children's back, and we're trying to get them through life. We're trying to get our children to the point where they become productive men and women in society. We're trying to get them to college. We still have, a lot of us still have the mantra that we just need to get them through high school and get them into college. And once they go to college, they'll be able to get a good job and they'll be able to make their way in the world. So we don't really look at trying to get economically savvy. We don't look at how to grow generational wealth. We don't look at the type of legacies that we're leaving for our children. And someone, I don't know where they got it from, but they said that legacy is not what you leave to a person, but what you leave in a person. And if you look again at the people in society, in America, who are the wealthiest in America, they have generational wealth. You are just not going to pop up on the scene and get in with them like that if you don't have that kind of money. When you go to the Hamptons and they go to vacation and they do all these other things, that is where, you know, you see all of that happen. But why are we? Apologize, I don't know what happened there. I got disconnected. But thank you very much for sticking there with me. But as I was saying, again, this is a very important topic to me as a woman, because I remember the turning point for me when I really decided I needed to get involved in knowing how to grow my money, knowing how to use my money to help my family. When I grew up, my mother, you know, she was the one who was over our finances. My father worked sometimes when, you know, he could find a job, sometimes he got laid off. But my mom, in addition to working a job, she went to school. She was a certified teacher. And she always seemed like she tried to have a little side hustle or do something on the side in addition to making money through employment. And she worked at meat packing places. She was a corrections officer. She taught at schools. She worked at a bank. So she had a varied amount, you know, varied. And so, but her approach to money really wasn't about how to grow it. She knew how to make it. You know, we had times when we struggled financially, I remember growing up, but she knew how to make it. And from what I understand, not too long after I was born, my parents bought some land and they built their first house from the ground up as newlyweds. And they moved in, and then my brother and my sister were born. But we never really talked too much about money in our house, except for the fact that I always would hear her talk about how there wasn't enough. and she just had a way of always, you know, complaining about money. So my thing when I was growing up is that I always knew that I never wanted to be broke. I knew that I wanted to be able to have money to do what it was I wanted to do, when I wanted to do it, where I didn't have to take my children to McDonald's and split a hamburger and a fry. Even, you know, back in the day, it had to be like 35 cents. But, you know, times were different then, so 35 cents was still a lot at that time. But, and I always wanted to be able to buy soda instead of having to drink the free ice water that came along with the split fry and burger that me and my sister and my brother got. Then when I got older, I remember I got my first job at 15. It was like a telemarketing job, and we were all at these long tables selling some little coupon booklets. But I was so happy that I got my first job. And then I ended up graduating high school when I was 15, so I was able to work. I started working at a credit union here where I live at. And they had me part-time. And then once they found out that I had graduated school, the president of the credit union, she agreed to let me work full-time. And I worked, and I really was never a big shopper. I never was a big spender, because that was another thing when we grew up. Everything that we had either came from Roman Sews or from a thrift shop, or my mom called herself trying to make our clothes. So, and I say called herself because she was not a good seamstress at all. That's a whole other subject for a whole other day. But she tried. She tried. And with my dad being a pastor, we're really conservative, so we didn't wear makeup, we didn't wear jewelry, we didn't wear pants, so it wasn't like we went out and had to go get brand name jeans or anything like that. Like I said, even our shoes came from a thrift store or a garage or a rummage sale, a yard sale, and were always secondhand. And I really, because we couldn't wear pants, I never liked the whole one or two shoes and skirts kind of thing, so I always wore dress shoes. I always dressed like I was on my way to a business meeting. So I only had a couple pair of dress shoes. But so when I got my first job, I never thought, well, I'm going to go to the mall, I'm going to go shopping, I'm going to do all these things. Only thing I knew was to follow the example that had been set for me, and that was that I was to go to work, make a paycheck, to put the money in the bank. And that's what I did. And then I bought my first car, and as soon as I got it, there were some things that went wrong with this, so I had to immediately get a new motor put in it. But I bought my first car. And then I was going to college still, so I started working two jobs. I was working at the credit union during the day, and then I started working at another telemarketing spot at night. And I was also going to college in between that time at 16. But I still saved my money. And then eventually I decided I was ready to move out of my parents' house. I didn't tell them, but I started buying little things and putting it in my trunk when I would go in your household, things that I would need, like plates and rugs and stuff like that. And then when I did move out, I moved out by myself at 17 to my own apartment, and it was fully furnished with my own money, and I didn't have a roommate. And even at a young age, I had already put in my head that I did not want to move into a place with a roommate, because if they never came up with their part of the rent, I didn't want to be dependent on someone else to make sure that I had a place to live. I didn't want to go through all that stress. So I made sure that my income was able to sustain me if I lived by myself. And I had wanted to be a doctor when I was younger, and that was my ambition to go to college to be a doctor. But because my parents didn't let me go away to college at such a young age, business became the next thing. And I really became really intrigued with economics and the supply and demand. I loved micro and macroeconomics. Once I learned about that, that was something that was really, it was really intriguing to me. And I eventually wanted to get my degree in accounting, but and just going into management. But the point that I'm getting at with this is that, again, even when my parents saw that I was saving money, and I had a lot of money in the bank when I was 18, 19 years old, and I ended up meeting my oldest son's father, which he was a lot. He was a few years older than me, but he was really street smart, and he had a couple. When I met him, he was like 21. He just gotten out of prison, and he had a few children under his belt that I didn't know anything about, was really street savvy. And I thought I was in love, and I, you know, met this guy, and, you know, I'm buying him all this kind of stuff. And he saw how much money I was spending at 18 years old. You know, I'm buying him, like, a 14-karat herringbone chain. So it was on sale for $1,000. Now, you know, back in 93, 94, for an 18-year-old girl, that was a lot of money. And, I didn't think anything of it. I thought I liked him, you know, and I wanted him to know how much I liked him. So I was buying his children gifts and bought him new clothes and things like that. So he eventually talked me into giving him some money because he said he would give it back to me. And before I knew, my bank account was down to zero. I got another job at another bank. I lost the job. Was living in this raggedy apartment. I moved out of my really nice duplex and had moved into this raggedy townhouse with a hole in the floor. And then I found out that I was pregnant and ended up moving back in with my parents. But no one taught me what to do with all the money that I had. And I think back now at the fact that I would have had financial education, that someone would have taught me about economics, I could actually probably have owned a couple of properties by the time I was 21. Or I could have actually invested my money into some stocks or training or did something that could have tripled my money. And probably by the age of 30, I could have retired. Because it wasn't that I was a big spender. I didn't really, I just made money. That's all I did. And the way that I met my son's dad was working at a bar because I was the type of person, I didn't like to go out because there was too much noise, too much drama, and I wasn't going to spend my money on alcohol getting drunk. So they were looking for a waitress at the bar where my aunt's boyfriend was a DJ at the time. And so I was like, well, if I'm going to be out, I might as well get paid to be out. And that was my whole purpose. And then I became a bartender, and I was good at it. So that was another thing. I would work weekends, like Thursday through Saturday, at the bar making money. And that's what I did. I always knew how to make it, which a lot of us as women, we know how to make it, but we don't really know what to do with it. Some other statistics that I was reading over the last week talked about home. We are still making like 20% less than white men when it comes to the wage gap. But we are putting in more hours of work than any other group in the working class. And it doesn't matter if we have a degree or not, we're still not making what we should be making. And I know that it's important for us as women to learn how to have a positive relationship with money because of the fact that, again, if we're not the only breadwinner in our homes, we are with a partner, and hopefully we are sharing that financial responsibility with our partner. However, the other issue that ends up happening is that we're putting in more hours trying to make ends meet, and we're still not able to do that. So what we have to do is learn how to make our money work for us. And if you see the topic of tonight's show, I titled it Red Bottoms, Louis V Bags, and Bundles, A Woman's Relationship with Her Money. Because, women, one thing we do know how to do is we know how to keep ourselves up. We do know how to make sure that we look good and we smell good. And when it comes to our hair, the hair is a billion-dollar industry. I know some people that they couldn't pay their mortgage and they couldn't pay their rent, but they could buy that bundle, baby. Their hair was laid to the gods, and the amount of money they were spending on their hair was just about the same amount of money that they needed to be able to pay their mortgage or pay their rent. Same thing when it came to getting their nails done. And they were at the salon making sure that their nails stay right, their hair stay right, they got the lashes on, but they don't have no money in the bank. I remember the very first time I looked and paid rent
a Michael Kors purse for like $35 a week. That blew my mind. I was like, I've never seen a bag that's that important for me to be able to rent it, to carry it. But they target poor people with millionaire mindset. Now, let me break it down when I say millionaire mindset. I'm not talking about people who are actually working toward achieving wealth, who want to become millionaires, who are doing something to achieve that status when it comes to either pushing their own product, opening their own business, investing their money, however they're trying to do it. That's not what I'm talking about. I was at a retreat over the weekend, last weekend, and that I spoke at, and I love the way this sister put it. She said having caviar taste with tuna fish money. Well, we went. Because we hear in the music, we hear in the entertainment, we hear about stars all of the time. They get all of this money, and you see them in the videos, and they're flashing money, and they got the chains, and they got the clothes, and they got the cars, and they got the girls, and they got the guys, or they get the beach house, and they're kicking it, and then 1-2 years later, you find out that they're in tax trouble, or that they've gone completely broke, and you're like, how? Why? Because of our relationship with money. Now, I was up early this morning and I just wrote a few things down that I kind of like to share with you. Too long, we as black women have been afraid to stand in our own power because we're trying to live down a negative stereotype. But we as black women, we are strong, we are proud, we are loud, and we are independent, but we want to be interdependent. But who can we be interdependent on? We are not bitter and we are not angry until you give us something to be angry about. When we try to be ourselves, we are not accepted. We're too black. When we try to fit in, to go along, to get along, we want to be Becky. I say the hell with it all. Be you, sister, say it. Know what is going on tonight, why this keeps kicking me out. But it's okay, because sometimes I know technology does not want us to be great, but we will be great tonight by the help of the Almighty. So I'm going to go back into reading what I wrote. But as I was saying, why are we not talking more about money and economics in our community? And as I said already, with the statistics that 63% of black homes are single-parent homes, with the majority of those homes led by women, why are we as women not becoming more financially savvy? For those who know the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he said that 75% of the work is done with the woman. I used to think that meant in the house, but the lessons teach us that we would have money, good homes, and friendships in all walks of life. Who can bring that all together? I believe that we as women, black women in particular, have been oppressed for so long we have forgotten who we are and how powerful we are. If we ever got sick and tired of being sick and tired, we can shut some stuff down. Our struggle is not on the outside, but on the inside. Black women, I believe we are so busy trying to live down negative stereotypes that we're not fully standing in our own strength. We get caught up in trying to stroke the male ego sometimes. We don't do what we know is right. I remember being younger and being taught that a woman is to obey her husband. Okay, I get that. And I was also told that she is to obey him even if she doesn't agree with him. Okay, side eye. So I remember asking when I was younger, what if your husband tells you to do something wrong? I was told I was reaching, but I thought it was a legitimate question, because I was supposed to do what he told me to do. So I would say, what if your husband tells you to do something that is harmful to you? And again, I was told I was reaching, but I'm trying to get clarification. So I rephrased my question again, trying to gain some clarity. And I said, what if your husband tells you to do something that isn't beneficial to your family? I was told to follow him anyway and God would reward you. Called BS on that one. If a man puts you and your family in a situation that is knowingly not securing your family, you don't have a husband, you have a male, because a husband is to maintain and to protect and to provide. We have work to be done in our communities, and we as women are like the man in the ocean drowning, waiting on God to save us. He sends the helicopter, and we shoot a helicopter away and say, no, I'm waiting on God. He sends us a boat. We say, no, go away. I'm waiting on God. And then we die while waiting for God, and then we ask him, why didn't you come and save us? And he says, I sent you a helicopter. I sent you a boat. But we don't accept the help that comes. Yes, we are waiting on our men to step up, but sometimes it's not happening fast enough. If a nation can rise no higher than its woman, we must elevate. Elevate our thinking, elevate our actions, elevate our respect, elevate our decision-making process. And for those of you who know the Bible, the Proverbs 31 woman in the Bible was a powerful woman. She took care of her home. She went out and she had a business. Her husband trusted in her safely. She even made sure that the servants of her house were taken care of. When women are spoken of in the Bible, they carry influence. The wisest king they say ever lived, who was Solomon, was given the basic instructions on how to find the right woman for his success, which is what the Proverbs 31 woman is about in that chapter. It was a king whose mother was telling him about how to find a woman. His mother gave him those instructions, not his father. And his mother was telling him what kind of woman to look for to help him to be a successful man. I attended an event last year by a woman who is Dr. Venus Hobories, and a very beautiful woman, very powerful woman. And she has a coaching program called the Black Woman's Millionaire. And if you have a chance to Google that, look her up. She's, again, a very powerful woman. I love her. Very, I've had a chance to meet her, and she's a very beautiful woman. And when I went to her event she had in Chicago, and she talked about the relationship of money with Black women, and a lot of times when we talk about the effects of slavery and different things like that, we talk about it when it comes to our self-esteem. We talk about it when it comes to the family dynamic. We talk about it when it comes to how we hate ourselves personally. And the thing that we don't talk about a lot is how it affected us economically. We know that when we were freed as slaves, we were promised that we were going to be given 40 acres and a mule so that we could be able to sustain ourselves and begin to basically survive economically, which is something that never happened. At this event, though, she had us women close our eyes, and when we opened our eyes, we were looking at a copy of the bill of sale that a person would see back in the day. For those of you who believe it, we know that the DNA and some of the trauma that we experienced as a people still has trickled down to the DNA of those of us who exist today. That the hurt and the pain that we felt is still in ourselves today. And she talked about how we had a negative view of money because money took away our husbands. Money separated us from our children. Money got us bought and kept us enslaved. Money. So we don't address the things that subconsciously keep us from attracting wealth and knowing how to properly handle money. Sometimes I think we don't even really realize what we're doing when we do it. I don't know if you've ever heard the expression. I used to hear it when I was growing up.
My mom used to say, oh, to tell, my father used to say it. Like, people can't keep money, burning a hole in their pocket. As soon as they get it, they got to spend it. Why are we like that? As soon as we get some money, we have to just run out to the store and spend it, even if we don't need anything. You always got to have new cars. You got to have new clothes. You got to have new shoes. All the people that I see that line up to get the new pair of Jordans all the time. And, again, I look at their basic economic condition when it comes to having the necessities, and they're struggling. They're struggling to have heat. They're struggling to have water. They're struggling to have electricity. They're struggling to stay in the same place for more than 6 months at a time. But yet, you'll run out to the store to buy $100-some-plus pair of sneakers or $50 pair of shoes for your children that they don't even need it. But what about having life insurance for them? What about having an education fund set up? Even if they decide that they don't want to go to college, what would you, instead of it just being college funds, what about them being able to have an entrepreneurial fund? Doesn't want to go to college once they turn 18 and they get out of high school. But how can I properly help them fund their own business? These are some things that I wish that I would have known years ago. It's not too late for me to be able to get to that point, but I really wish that I would have done that. So far I've only had one child graduate, so I still have the other two, so I still have the opportunity to do it for them, because all of my children have a mindset that they want to work for themselves. Even like my oldest daughter, she's talking about going to be an attorney, but she still wants to have her own practice. But all of my children have the mindset of wanting to do for themselves, because that is what they've seen imitated by their dad and myself, and they still see that imitated by me. But I don't want my children to become consumers. I want them to become investors, because I want them to plant something and get something out of it. This morning, as I was taking my daughter to school, I was talking to her about her money habits. She started working the job a couple of months ago, and she can't wait till payday on Friday, because to her, it means she gets to go shopping. And I was talking to her, I'm like, why do you feel like you have to spend every dime that comes into your hand? She went to the store and she wanted some Chanel perfume, kind of costly that for a 16-year-old. And I asked her, and I said, now that you bought it, what is it doing for you? And she's like, oh, it makes me smell good. I'm like, but you said that you wanted to get a car, and that money that you spent on that little bottle of perfume, I could have gotten you some natural oils for a fraction of the cost, and you would have even smelled better. Could moisturize your skin and not just you spraying on this concoction of alcohol and water, the little bit of fragrance in it that you spent like $40 for. And I could see the wheels in her head turning. And I told myself, I'm like, oh my goodness, Shannon, what are you doing? You know what it looks like to be reaching toward generational wealth, but you can't just acquire the wealth and not teach your children how to handle it once you acquire it, because I know by the grace of the Almighty, I will acquire it, and I will be changing the financial legacy of my family for generations to come. That is my job. That's why I'm put here, and that's what I'm striving for. I want to be able to leave wealth for my grandchildren's grandchildren's grandchildren. A lot of the issues that we also have is that we, as a people, we work harder because we want our children to have better, and we want them to do better than what we were able to do, and we want to give them more, but we don't teach them how to maintain it, and we don't teach them what to do with it once they get it. We just, we feed them, we give them these great lifestyles, but we don't teach them how to maintain it. And so, again, I'm hosting a free teleconference tomorrow morning at the beginning of the launch of my business, IWBS, Inspired Women's Business Solutions, and it's financial freedom, and you can profit from your passion. And I'm securing your spot for that tomorrow.
please email me at coachscharris@gmail.com, and I will email you back the link where you can register for that free teleconference. Because, again, I'm very, very passionate about making sure that we get our financial literacy up, that we as women especially know more about how to use our money wisely and stop feeding into the madness that we have to look a certain way. If we don't look a certain way, then we're not acceptable. If we don't spend all of this money on superficial things. Now, listen, I don't have a problem. I'm not saying not to look good. I'm not saying don't take care of yourself. But when we're doing it because we're trying to cover up something that's deep inside of us and we have a bad relationship with money, and our relationship with money is that we have to dress to impress, that's the wrong thing. So tomorrow on this free teleconference, I'll be talking to you about how you can turn your passion into profit. Again, as I said, this does not want me to be great tonight, but that's okay. I'm going to keep on pushing. But again, please email me at coachscharris@gmail.com, and I will send you the link to register for that free teleconference tomorrow that I will be hosting for my IWBS, Inspired Women's Business Solutions. Also, if you are a budding entrepreneur, or you have an idea that you have been working on and you are ready to take your business to the next level because you are tired of working long hours and not making ends meet, you're getting tired of missing out on family functions, missing out on things with your children and your family because you have to work long hours, you have mandatory overtime, you don't have enough PTO, what have you. I'm looking for 10 women who are ready to take their ideas to the next level. Let me help you with the process of walking you through building your business and being able to start financing your freedom and profiting from your passion. As I was saying before the call cut off, tomorrow on this teleconference, I will be letting you know how you can profit from your passion, what it means to be financially independent, give you some strategic tools to decrease your debt, and also tell you how you can increase your financial IQ. As I was saying last week, when we become more financially savvy as women, we bring that into our homes. We can teach our children. If we have a partner, we have a husband, we can help him make better financial decisions that will increase our family as a whole. Most of the time, we as women, we do the budgeting in our households. So when we know more about how money works, when we have ideas and visions on how we can grow our money and create wealth in our families, not just having paycheck to paycheck. And it doesn't matter what your credit score looks like, because that's another trick that is being played on us when it comes to the credit thing. As I was saying, I don't think I finished the thought, but when it came to the point where the rubber hit the road for me, where I'm aware of the crossroads that I had to take in creating my own financial freedom and also becoming more educated on finances, was when I knew that I had to file for divorce. And I knew that I had to leave my marriage in order for my sanity and for the well-being of my children. And as I said on a previous show, I had started looking at different books about economics and about wealth building because, for one thing, my ex-husband and I, we were running a business. He was running this business, and I was helping him manage it. And the business was doing excellent, but he was not good with money. And I took a back seat as a woman because I was a stay-at-home mom to our children, and I managed his from our home in the basement. Occasionally I would go down to the office so I could get out of the house and feel like a regular person. But I would do his bookkeeping from the house. And so I really felt like I couldn't say too much about how our money was being spent or what was being done with the money, which is another issue. We as women have got to stop taking a backseat approach to things that are directly affecting our lives. I don't care if you're not working. If you are a stay-at-home mom and you're taking care of the children and you're balancing the bills and helping out, I don't care. Even if you're a stay-at-home mom and you're not, per se, bringing any money into the house, I for darn sure bet that you're helping to make sure that expenses stay low that he's bringing into the house. I know, because I did that when I was a stay-at-home mom. I made sure that I checked for deals on diapers when we had small babies. I made sure that when I did the grocery shopping, I stayed within the budget and I bought what we needed. When it came to clothes shopping, that I bought what we needed because I knew that I wasn't the one that was going out to get the money, even though I was helping him to get the money by trying to make sure his books were still right and that he was decreasing expenses even when it came to his business. I still was helping to make sure that our family was financially stable. And we as women have got to stop taking this backseat approach because we don't think that we're front and foremost, that we can't say anything, and we can't speak up about what's right. If we have a way that we can help our partners or our husband get better with money management, we need to say that. We need to speak up on that. But as I was saying, I started looking at books on financial literacy because I knew that there was a shift that was happening in my life. And even though we were bringing in good money when it came to the business, our credit scores together were both under 500. And at this time when this was happening, we were thinking about buying a house because the house that we lived in, we had five children and he and myself, and the house was less than 1,000 square feet that we were living in. And at this time, all of my children, being under 9 and under, they were younger than that. I take that back. My youngest son was born in 2006, and so I think my oldest son probably was maybe 6 or 7. And so I started reading because I was like, listen, so when I get a divorce, I'm going to buy a house. Me and my children, we're going to buy a house together. I know how to make money, and I know how to manage money, but I need to know how to get out of this hole that I'm in with my credit, because I stopped working and I had a few credit cards and things like that. And then another thing that comes along when you're making money and you have your own business, you have to make sure that you know what to do when it comes to the government. You have to know how to make sure you're keeping your income records properly. You shouldn't have to pay more than what you actually owe. And he wasn't paying attention to that, so we ended up with a tax debt. And when we got divorced, half of that legally became mine because I live in Iowa and it's a communal state. So I had to put a plan of action into place. I had to be strategic about what I was going to do with my money, how I was going to acquire money to be able to take care of my children, and also have the life that I dreamed about, which at that time was being able to take care of them regularly, have food on the table regularly, have clothes on their back, and buy my own home. That was my goal. I wanted to own my own house, and I wanted it to be big enough where they could have their own rooms. Only a couple of them had to share rooms, and that we would have plenty of room to be up and downstairs and just be children and be carefree. And we could have room. That was my goal. And the book that I read, one of the books that I read, I can't recall the book off the top of my head. I just remember what it said because it hit me like a bucket of cold water. Many women who get divorced, they end up impoverished because the husband was the main breadwinner in the family. And especially a woman who had been a stay-at-home mom with children, the percentage was high, but she was likely to end up in poverty because she couldn't financially take care of herself. And I remember saying to myself, that will not be me. I don't care what I got to do to make it happen. That will not be me. So I pulled my credit score. So I was also saying that was during the time when the housing market was booming, and you had a lot of people out there that were selling this program, saying that we can clean your credit up in days, and we can boost your credit score up to a couple hundred points within a couple of weeks, because they were doing some things, you know, some funny things that I know about now, and I, you know how that works. But it was during that time, because we were going to hire someone to do that so that we could buy a house. But when I knew that it was time for me to move forward with my life and I needed to get a divorce, I pulled my credit report from all three credit bureaus, and I got out a highlighter, and I started highlighting all the debt that I had. And then when I figured what that was, I looked at myself. I was like, okay, where are we going to get a job at? Went out and I found a job and started working. And I asked my mother if she would take care of my children, so she lived down the street from me, and she was willing to do that. The budget, and I started paying off things. I started calling people, and I started educating myself on how the credit report works and how it is read, and it's changed a lot since then. So even if one of the things you're doing is you're pulling your credit report because you're trying to eliminate some debt, make sure you know how the credit reports are read. For example, back in the day, back in 2003 or 2006, when we were looking at credit reports, they were looking at how much debt you had on the credit card. Everybody wanted it down to zero. And now looking at it down to a certain percentage of the total available credit is good. They want you to have that much. People think that by not having any credit cards or any debt showing up on your credit report, that's a good thing. Not so. That even hurts your credit even more if you don't have some debt out there. So you have to know what you're looking at. You have to play the game, because that's what really it is. It's a big game. And a lot of people that appear to be rich, they're not really rich. They don't have money. They just know how to shuffle their debt. They know how to make their debt work for them. They know how to make it work in their favor. So I pulled the credit report, and I started looking at everything that I needed to owe, and I made a budget, and I started paying off things. And then after my divorce was final, even when it came to the tax that we had, I wrote into the state. I wrote to the state, and I can't remember. I think Iowa State Revenue, and I explained to them, you know, this is my situation, and this is how much you said that this is owed on this, and how can I take care of my half? I even knew that there were some things that I could settle and get paid out of the way. And I knew that it was going to take a while to drop off my credit report, but at least it was paid, and it didn't show that I owed anything. And my debt-to-income ratio was more in a score. I knew that I would be able to get a house. So when you begin to get educated about how your money works for you, what an asset is, what a liability is, what cash flow is, when you increase your financial IQ, when you know the different things that you can invest in, and that doesn't mean just investing in the stock market or just buying bonds, which is a way a lot of people think when it comes to investment from back in the day, but it's so many different things that you can invest in now. Having passive income where you're not touching it, but you're making money, that you make money when you're asleep, and that's what I'm striving for. When I say 2018 about securing the bag, that's what I mean. I need to secure that bag, because that bag is going to be so full of money. I got to make sure that it's secured, it's clutched next to me. I got my eyes on it at all times. Money to make money. It takes money to be able to move things forward in our community. We need homeless shelters. We need medical care. We need educational centers, not just for our youth, but for people who are trying to educate themselves. I've always had this dream and goal that I want to have a center for women where they can come and learn resume skills, where they can come and learn interview skills, where there's so many different things that they need can all be under one roof and one center. But I can't do that if I don't have money. And I can't make the kind of money that I need until I get financially savvy about how to move from step to step. Some people, they may be able to become millionaires overnight because they win the lottery. But if you look at the after story, even on those, people who acquire money fast because the relationship and the mindset that they have with the money has not changed.
And for a lot of us, that's what the issue is, that we learn how to make the money, but the attitude that we have in regards to money, we don't change it. Going back to the story and the way that I was raised when it came to my mother, she was always speaking lack even though she had the money. So eventually what began to show up in her life, lack. As I've often said too, that the power of life and death is in the tongue. Whatever we say is what we will receive. So if we're constantly talking about we're broke, we don't know how to make money, we don't, or hearing the expression that money doesn't grow on trees, or different things that we have to work hard to even get money. That's sending negative energy out into the universe when we need to switch up our language. Even when we talk in spiritual terms that the love of money is the root of all evil. And I was laying in my bed the other night and I was thinking about that. And people are saying, oh, the love of money, we're not, money's not a good thing. But what happens is when someone is looking at money as God, they're willing to do anything for it because they want to possess it. Because to them, money is the end all be all. So that's why people rob people. They rob people to get the money to do what? Sometimes people rob people for the money to get drugs. They rob people for the money to get food. They rob people for the money to pay a bill. But it's because of their attitude towards money and the relationship with money. It puts them in a negative place. And I recall, you know, really the kind of relationship that I have with money is that it's just energy. If I don't have anything for it to do, then it won't come to me. And I'm not talking about just paying bills, but if I don't have a bigger job for it to do, it will not come to me until I actually am able to do something with it just or give it to someone who values that piece of paper for whatever service or product that they have. So if that car is not worth $50,000 to me, I'm not going to pay $50,000 for it. But I know how the system works, so I'm not just going to offer $5 for it even if that's what I feel that it's worth. So we have a lot to learn when it comes to increasing our financial IQ, and I'm not going to belabor the show too much longer since I keep getting kicked out and I don't want to have to keep dialing in and out and inconveniencing you as well, because I really do appreciate you listening to me. I appreciate you putting up with the technical difficulty that I am experiencing, but I really do appreciate you tuning in. But my whole point again tonight is that we have got to increase our financial education. We have to increase our financial IQ. We have so many things that need to be done in our community, and we can no longer stand by and wait for people to give us a handout or a hand up. We have to do it ourselves because we can do it in our community. It's been proven time and time again throughout history that when we come together, we are strong and we are mighty, and we can get the job done. You look at Black Wall Street and what happened when they decided to band together and stand up and take control of their money and their finances. They grew a whole community around it. We keep saying that we want freedom, but how much are you willing to pay for freedom? And I'm not talking about just your life, because when you're dead and gone, the people that you left behind still have to eat. They still have to have a place to sleep. They still have to be able to walk down the street. It can be so easy to just say, you know, this is not important because I'm, you know, a revolutionist and I don't want to be part of the system. Well, right now, in all reality, we are still a part of the system. And back in the day, if you remember hearing the story of slavery, that when a person wanted to be free, they'll go to their master and ask them how much they wanted for them. Their master will tell them how much they had to work to earn. And for some people, because, I mean, slavery was an employment, people weren't getting paid for that. When they were able to actually find some type of employment, that gained them some money. It could take them 1 or 2 years before they can even buy their own freedom. And then they wanted to buy the freedom of their wife or their husband, and then buy the freedom of their children. Look at what the legacy is that we have been left when it comes to money and our finances. So, again, for those of you who are interested in either working with me directly to help take your financial situation to the next level in the year 2018, to decrease your debt, to start your own business, profit from your passion, to increase your financial IQ and become more economically savvy and learning how to work, make your money work for you, please go to www.iwbusinesssolutions.com. And at the top, there's a tab that says Discovery. I'm giving away a few 30-minute complimentary discovery calls. Click on that. It'll take you to my appointment calendar. Set a time for us to talk. Free 30 minutes. Give me a chance to get to know you, and you a chance to get to know me even further, and to talk about how IWBS can help you achieve your financial goals and live the life that you always wanted to live. Financial freedom is about being able to do what you want to do when you want to do it without having to look at a clock, without someone having to tell you no, you can't because you haven't built up enough PTO, or you got to take FMLA leave and we need to go through this paperwork process first, or we need to stay late tonight because we got a deadline, or so-and-so didn't come in so we need you to take another shift. Aren't you tired of that? Aren't you tired of that? I'm so passionate about helping our people grow economically so that we can buy the land that we want and need, education of our children in a better way, that we can take care of our elders in our communities in a better way if they need a further help. We have to be able to sustain our rise. We have to be able to put our money where our mouth is. For so long, you know, we go to church and we give our tithe. God does not need our money. And before those of you who are listening, you get the hairs on the back of your neck start raising because I'm talking about tithe. And you want to talk about how you've given, and because you pay your tithe, you have, you don't lack for anything. The Bible doesn't even talk about if you give the tithe that you're never going to lack for anything. That isn't even what it says. And yes, you do get blessed for giving because you're creating karma. You are putting out into the universe what it is that you want to receive. So therefore, if you give, you will get it back. There's no deep end over-the-top explanation. And that's just simply what it is. You get back what you put out. So if you give, you get back. To do, we go to church and we give money, and but we don't see changes in our community. We don't even see changes a lot of time within the sanctuary that we're in. I was joking with a friend the other day. And I'm like, dang, since this church was at the same building front since I was a little girl, and they still haven't done nothing yet. Carpet's still raggedy, benches still squeaking, make you afraid to sit on them. So we have power. But we have to be able to financially sustain our lives. So please email me at Coach S as in Sam, C as in Carl, Harris, H-A-R-R-I-S, at gmail.com if you're interested in securing your space for tomorrow for the free teleconference. You can join me from the comfort of your own home. You don't even have to go anywhere. You need to snuggle up and dial in and listen and take a few notes. If you're wanting to get a complimentary 30-minute discovery call with me, go to www.iwbusinesssolutions.com, click on Discovery, and set your appointment up for when is a great time for you and I to get together and talk.
about your vision, your dream, what it is that you want to do for the year 2018 that's going to help you secure that bag and begin to create generational wealth for your children, for your grandchildren, for your parents, those that are around you. That is another goal of mine. Is I want to be able to make my parents secure while they are still young enough to enjoy their life, to be able to move around and go on vacation, do whatever it is they need to do without having to worry how much it's going to cost because I got them. I want them to be able to enjoy life while they are still, well, I consider young. They're almost in their mid-60s, but shoot, to be that young. They can still move about on their own, and that's what I want them to be able to do. And for my children, to be able to help them out in what it is that they desire to do. When it comes to opening their own businesses and things like that. So I would love to get the opportunity to talk to you, and if we're a fit for each other, I would love to have you be part of my study group that starts in January. And that's going to carry into the month of March. I have a retreat that's coming up in the month of May, Well Woman 360. You don't want to miss that. So please reach out to me because we are stronger together than we are apart. And it's a trick of the enemy that they keep using to try to keep us divided. Some people will listen to me tonight and think that I'm trying to divide men and women when it comes to their household. That's not what I'm trying to do, brothers. When it says that a nation can rise no higher than its women, when we get our head on straight and we think about how to make that money grow, do you think that we're going to leave you behind? Absolutely not. Hopefully you'll come along with us, and then some of the ideas that you have, you'll be able to get out there, and you'll be able to see your vision manifest because you didn't quit trying. And you can be able to live the life that you desire to live by being able to use what you have to get what you want. And I don't mean that in an illegal way or anything like that. But we spend money on a lot of frivolous things that we don't need, and we don't even realize it until it's too late. Want you to reach out to me. And again, you can go to iwbusinesssolutions.com, and it has current events coming up, and it also has some events coming up. It has the appointment calendar where you can do the discovery call. And I don't know why I just said that, so I'm just flashing to my head. Lord, have mercy. I've been up most for the last couple of hours. My boys are home, so I've been cooking for them, and they have me cooking. They had me cooking today like it was Thanksgiving all over again, but I left half of my children at home. And, again, that's another reason why I'm pushing for economic freedom, because I want to be able to have my children in a place where we can be together. It's time for me to upgrade and move to another house, but where we can all be in the kitchen together, creating some memories together. And God willing, when they get old enough to be married and have their own children, and I get to be a grand diva, then they'll all be there. And they'll be able to come to the house, and we can spend some time together. But I'll also be able to help finance their dreams and be able to give them money as a gift to start their own business so they can work toward their own economic freedom. But again, that's tomorrow morning. The teleconference is tomorrow at 10 a.m. Email me at coachscharris@gmail.com, and I will send you the link to that so you can reserve your spot and get on there and find out how to make your money move. Also, we'll be continuing again next Friday to talk about economics and how it's impacting us as a people and what we need to do to be able to continue to finance our lives. Also, please go to Facebook and look up Inspired Women Business Solutions and like my page there. I will be putting some tips and things out there. You know, 2017 is coming to an end. A lot of people want to complain. I can't complain because I learned how to do some things differently. I learned what not to do. I learned what I should have done and didn't do.
and I would love for you to do the same. We got what it takes us to move forward, that move our people forward, move our families forward. And that doesn't mean that we're taking over, we're trying to do something other than what we were put here to do. But a nation can rise no higher than its woman. 75% of the work is done with us. We got to quit playing small. It ain't that we can't handle it because we can. We got to stop playing small. And it can be done. So again, because this keeps cutting out on me, and I want to just don't want to prolong this. I don't know how many more times it's going to happen. But I hope that you heard something tonight that will inspire you to grab a book, Google an article, do something to read about how we can start building generational wealth and leave a better legacy for our children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, what have you. You can look me up on Facebook at Inspired Women Business Solutions Life page. And again, tomorrow morning and for this conference call. And I'll also be doing a couple webinars too before the end of the year with some more tips how to get that money, secure that bag, make those money moves. So again, I thank you for joining me this evening on the Initiative Radio Network. And I pray that you will enjoy the rest of your evening. Enjoy your weekend. Love on somebody. Love on yourself. Do something for someone. Plant that seed and expect that harvest. So, again, this has been your Economic Empowerment Strategist, Shannon C. Harris. I thank you. And as always, I pray that you go in peace, love, and light. God bless.